And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is being recorded in early January 2022. If it helps center you, the carbon dioxide levels on the globe today are 417.81 parts per million. Well, it turns out that in the renewable energy revolution, new ideas keep presenting themselves, and they all ought to be considered and evaluated. One of the concepts or tools that will help us decarbonize is the use of hydrogen for many, many different kinds of ways to get rid of carbon dioxide. Hydrogen is an interesting case because in and of itself, it has good sides and bad sides, and it is subject to manipulation and distorted information being provided by the people that want to slow our conversion from decarbonization. So what we're going to talk about today is basically sort of a primer on hydrogen fuel and where it fits into our efforts to decarbonize the globe. I mean, how could you use hydrogen? What is it? Why do we care about it? How could you use it? In order to facilitate that conversation, we're happy to be joined by a couple of experts who are essentially working with an organization called Gas Leaks Allies. Gas Leaks Allies is a set of 30 or 40 nonprofits here in the Massachusetts area working on gas leaks of methane, natural gas. One of the subheadings there under Gas Leaks Allies is the Hydrogen Working Group. And from the Hydrogen Working Group of the Gas Leaks Allies, we have two experts, Kathy Christofferson, who spends most of her time working with an organization called PLAN, which is the Pipeline Awareness Network, and Sarah Griffith, who, when she's not working on hydrogen for the Hydrogen Working Group, spends her time with the Climate Reality Project in Boston. Both wonderful things. So we're thrilled to have you two guys here. How are you both doing?
We're good.
Cold.
It is cold today. We need some building heat.
So it certainly is true that the plan is to live well without destroying the planet, right? To live sufficiently well and be warm during the cold winter months in a way that's sustainable. So I tried to set up a little bit about hydrogen in that preamble, right? Hydrogen is a tool we can use. People need to understand more and more about it. Sarah, let me put it to you. What should people know about hydrogen when they see it in the newspaper or they hear about it related to climate change? What's the hydrogen 101 thing that people ought to know?
Well, I started hearing the gas utilities talk nonstop about hydrogen a little over a year ago. They just seem really into it. So I did start looking into the physical properties of hydrogen. It's the most common element in the universe. It's what stars are made of, and it's what rocket fuel's made of. We make ammonia from it, which is fertilizer, feeds the planet, and we use it in petroleum refining, partly to reduce sulfur and for other uses. So we already have a huge hydrogen industry globally and in America as well. But I was really interested in why the gas utilities were talking about it. And I just wondered, I thought, Kathy, you are more political than I am. What are the utilities seeing? What are they thinking?
Well, I think they're seeing that with the push for decarbonization, you know, in our Commonwealth and the country and the globe, that maybe their business model is a little outdated. And the product they're selling is what we're trying to transition off quickly. But at the moment here in Massachusetts, the gas companies can only sell gas. So the push to rapidly transition off of gas and electrification, you know, sort of leaves them out in the cold, as we're all going to center around cold today. You know, and they're trying to preserve their business model of pushing fuel through pipelines into homes and businesses to combust for energy. And that business model doesn't work in the electrification arena.
Right. And we know from trying to cut emissions that methane is an incredibly damaging gas, you know, 80 times as damaging over a 20-year period as carbon dioxide. And so the fastest way to cut emissions rapidly is to start eliminating methane. So it sounds like they're thinking that because when you burn hydrogen, it only makes water, that it would decarbonize. But hydrogen has all kinds of emissions, and it is an indirect greenhouse gas itself.
So tell me, if I'm, I don't know anything, right? Is hydrogen a liquid? Is it a gas? Where do we get it? And why would we consider it to be something that's sustainable?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Hydrogen doesn't exist on its own. So even though it's in literally almost everything, a big part of every biological molecule and every plastic and everything else, you have to make it. You have to do something to a fuel to get the hydrogen. So it's not a primary fuel. It's what's called an energy carrier. And that adds to the cost of hydrogen, which of course then becomes an equity issue if we want to get into that.
Well, I think the point you make is that hydrogen is everywhere is a good one, because it is sort of this intuitive message that you say hydrogen's everywhere. It's in your margarine, right? Hydrogenated oils, right? Hydrogen's everywhere. And it's because hydrogen is so chemically, it wants to grab on to stuff. And in a sense, you can sort of translate that into this sort of ability of hydrogen to grab onto other atoms is chemical energy, right? And so you have to put work into stuff to separate the hydrogen out from all the other things. And now you've got a bottle of literally gas, right? That if you expose it to anything, it wants to release that energy again. It wants to recombine chemically, right? But my question is, can you distinguish between what I've heard the name, maybe you can explain it to me. There's gray hydrogen and green hydrogen. What are the distinctions of those, and why should people care about that distinction, if there is one?
So the pretty rainbow, it distinguishes the feedstock and of the hydrogen. So right, so hydrogen is the H in H2O of water, right? But it's also the H of CH4, which is methane. Right. So you have to use some energy to separate off those H's to get just the pair of hydrogens that you want. You know, the other pretty colors, pink is if you use nuclear energy, brown. I don't know how the nukes got pink. Coal got brown, and pyrolysis got turquoise. For me, it's just another way to distract people, right? Instead of talking about hydrogen, look at the three of us are talking about colors, right? Pink and turquoise, and isn't that pretty? And if it's green, it must be good. If blue is makes you think of water, but really the green one is water, and the blue one is the pretty blue flame that billions upon billions of marketing dollars have gone into making us like the blue flame of fossil gas.
I think it's an important point to say that the hydrogen that you get, this rainbow of colors, right, of different kinds, I mean, it's all the same hydrogen. It's just what materials the hydrogen has been extracted from. But it was my understanding that if you extracted hydrogen from water using green electricity, like a windmill to drive the process, the chemical process, that hydrogen was more virtuous than, shall we say, the gray hydrogen that comes from putting energy into separating the hydrogen out of the methane, right? To take the H out of the CH4, right? Sarah, is that a fair description?
So theoretically, yes, but let's look at real reality as we do with the Climate Reality Project. So the real reality is that less than 1% of hydrogen currently made globally is green. Mm-hmm. They're just some small pilot projects. So the electrolyzers aren't commercially available to do that. Secondly, it's the most expensive way to make hydrogen, in part because there's no commercially available technology to do it with right mm-hmm. now. Third of all, the infrastructure that we would be injecting it in is not very tolerant of hydrogen. Hydrogen's very corrosive. So it's going to leak very fast. It's got to be under 3 times the pressure because it has a lower energy density than methane. So it's going to leak much more than the methane does. And it's an indirect greenhouse gas that makes the action of methane on the atmosphere worse, and it increases mm-hmm. particulate matter and does other bad things. So it's not, because of the expense of making green hydrogen, you want to really focus it on things like supporting the electric grid. And to get back to that, we have a lot of goals to install a lot of renewable to support the electric grid. How on earth are we going to be able to replace all of the combined cycle gas turbines and coal plants with renewable, and on top of it, make all this green hydrogen with renewables? And remember, you only get 30% of the energy out when you electrolyze that electricity, or when you use the electricity to make the green hydrogen.
So so what I hear you saying, the conception that you're presenting is that when we say hydrogen, for the time being, right, at least for the next 10 years or so, hydrogen is a material that's been derived from methane with many bad consequences. So hydrogen is bad by it has problems by itself. Does that argue that you can use hydrogen in some very specific places, as I think you said? But you're saying that as a working hypothesis for your working group is that any hydrogen is dirty hydrogen. And therefore, for me to talk about green hydrogen is kind of a fairy tale because it's going to take 10 years to get there.
Right. One thing Kathy likes to point out, I'm going to quote you, is probably the most hydrogen you could put into the pipe system is 15%. Some of the utilities are saying 20%. But as Kathy says, 20% hydrogen is still 80% methane. Right. So it just perpetuates the bad system that we have.
So just to be clear, so Gas Leaks Allies is focused on the problem that utilities are thinking about, for whatever reason, we can get into that maybe later on, that they want to add hydrogen to the natural gas mix that comes into your house. And that hydrogen is itself derived from methane and has a bunch of other problems. That's the issue that you're. So I guess when I talk about hydrogen, I am off in the ozone thinking about how great it would be to have green hydrogen and what could you do with truly green hydrogen sustainably produced. And it has issues, you know, hydrogen has issues. But you're much more pragmatically focused on the here and now, saying that if we're going to put hydrogen into the pipelines, there are problems in many respects, right?
Right. Go ahead, Kathy. I think what our hydrogen group is looking at is that hydrogen is not a replacement for fossil gas, either blended or in the, we call it a pipe dream of 100% hydrogen. So either to push through the pipelines to heat homes and businesses, or to push through the pipelines to the power plants. We were hearing from the folks in the Peabody peaker fight that MCAN is involved with, you know, that they were talking about how they would be decarbonizing that plant, because who thinks about making a gas and oil power plant in 2022? But they are. But don't worry, we'll blend it down with hydrogen and slowly decarbonize the power source. So mostly what the group is trying to look at is that hydrogen is not a replacement for natural gas pushed through the pipes into our homes. I wouldn't say we've been looking at other solutions, transportation or industry. But I think Sarah and I both have seen from reading that the green hydrogen that we can make needs to go to the things that we cannot easily electrify, right? There's big need for, you know, cargo ships and long haul transportation and smelting iron like we all do. But, you know, those things we need that right. that electrification may or may not, you know, work for. But those are the highest needs for the precious small amount right. of green hydrogen that we have.
So I'm going to the problem that you're working on, I'm going to split it in two. You tell me if you agree with it and then explain the two sides. On the one side, if the utilities are thinking about putting hydrogen into your gas line, they have to produce the hydrogen, which they're going to do from methane, which ends up, I think, being a net carbon dioxide emitter, right? So there's the production of the hydrogen from the methane is bad for the climate. But then there's the flip side, which I think is maybe less well understood, is that using, even at the 15% level, hydrogen has safety and health issues and maybe equity issues. That, you know, if you forget about the carbon dioxide you produced in making the hydrogen, you see, I think it's like embrittlement of the pipes, and you get, because the hydrogen burns harder, you get more particulate pollution, right? Is that a fair statement, fair way to think about, for people to think about the hydrogen issue?
Right. So there are a lot of issues with safety. One is that hydrogen is 3.5 times as explosive as natural gas and 5 times more flammable. So it's extremely reactive. And when it does catch fire, it has a clear flame. So the vision I had when I read that was riding my bike down the street and there's a leak, which you can't smell because the hydrogen gas disperses too quickly to add an odorant to, or a colorant. There's no way to make it visible or apparent.
With the analog being that funny smell you get with a natural gas. That's deliberately added odoration, right? Okay, keep going.
Right. Yeah. And so this leak is happening. It has to be, you know, compressed 3 times as high as methane. So you've got this leak coming out that could be very flammable. So you could ride your bike into a hydrogen fire and not know it until you were burned up. When we found this out, we called a local firefighter and we called the Mass Academy for firefighting, and neither one of them knew anything. They hadn't had any training on hydrogen and the utilities had not reached out to them. So there was no preparation on the part of the utilities to deal with the safety issues. So go ahead.
Oh, no, I would just say, as you were saying, right, the molecule is smaller, so it's going to leak out of our somewhat sieve-like distribution system. We can't odorize it with mercaptan or something similar like we do with the rotten egg smell of fossil gas, which is actually odorized way back at the gate station. They might come up with some way to do something maybe on the jets of your stove, whatever. It burns clear. Does this sound like something you want pushed into your home to cook your food in your kitchen?
Yeah, especially given the state of, you know, many gas stoves are aging. I mean, half of the gas stoves out there are older than average.
Right. The appliances are really where the health and safety issues merge. So you were talking about the temperature at which hydrogen burns, that creates NOx, the nitrogen oxide that is, you know, causes asthma or, you know, exacerbates asthma and COPD and these other, you know,
sort of. Sarah, if I could just jump in, not to interrupt, but I like to remind people NOx is NOx, and it's the X in that is a little subscript X for the, so it's nitrogen, oxygen, and X number of hydrogen, right? So it's this class of things that oxygen. Come out of the.
It's oxygen. It's one nitrogen.
Oxygen, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oxygen.
And a few oxygen atoms, 2 to 3.
So this is class of things that are called NOx, which are turn out to be little particulate kind of things that cause asthma and do a lot of bad stuff, right?
So they're not, it's not a particulate. It is a molecule. It's much smaller than a particulate matter. But it's a leading cause of asthma, and something like it's over 50% of the childhood asthma cases in Massachusetts are caused by a gas stove. So it's kind of amazing that that fact isn't known more widely, but it is really damaging. And especially in areas where you already have poor air quality, you know, you're increasing what's already in the air. Like if you think of Chinatown with the poor air quality right over the Mass Pike, and then you're adding more NOx to the atmosphere, it's very unjust and unfair.
And right, because in the low-income housing, right, it's just with this, with the gas and whatever you're burning in your kitchen, you need a really good quality air vent over the stove that actually vents the air, right, the exhaust. I know my mom moved into senior housing, and I was upset because she has gas, right, but it came with the place. And I said, why aren't you running the fan at least, you know? And she said, because it's not hooked up to anything, Kathy. It just blows it around the kitchen. So, and that wouldn't even be low income housing, just some senior housing and down on the south coast of Mass. And even there, where people have, it's the same as everyone who has no choice what they're cooking and heating is, right? You don't, I said, that's it. We're taking this out. I'm going to buy you an electric cooktop, you know. Well, you can't. The people that live there can't decide what their appliances are, which right. is the same with the folks in Chinatown, like you're saying, that are already sucking up the interstate gas, the folks in Springfield that are the asthma capital of the world, whether they were only in, not in first place this year, but the last 2 years. This is a huge equity issue, which we can probably spend a whole nother podcast on.
Yeah.
So what we've done in this discussion is to kind of set up the issues around the addition of hydrogen as it's currently produced into the natural gas lines that feed our homes here in Massachusetts. Is it possible that you guys could come back? We'll get another conversation that goes into a little bit more depth about what the utilities are trying to do and why they are, you know, what people should be aware of when they hear proposals from the utility, these kinds of things we've hinted at, right, of mixing in 50% hydrogen. Would that be okay? Would that be great? All right. What I will do is
let me just, I just want to have a conclusion here. When we looked into this, just sort of the physical properties of hydrogen. And the climate problem we're trying to solve, what we realized is that hydrogen and, you know, methane aren't a technical solution to our climate problem or even a problem of home heating. They're the solution to keep the gas distribution system going and keep the utilities in business. That's what it's a solution for. And as long as people keep that in mind, all these other factoids about it fall into place. And that sets us up to talk about policy in the next episode.
Super, super. What I will do is I will put up links at the MCAN blog to Gas Leaks Allies and your discussion of the Hydrogen Working Group. That'll be on the massclimateaction.org/blog website. So you can go check out the hot links there. If you have a question about this show or ideas of things we ought to be talking about, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what hot topics there are out in your neck of the woods. You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. There keep being more and more of them. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their favorite modern podcast distribution app on their cell phones, on their Bluetooth earbuds. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. I want to close where we always close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, and because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that protects environmental justice communities. So, Kathy, Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. It was great.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.